Well, we'll go ahead and get started because we're a little bit behind. But that's all right because we got a lot to cover today. So today, like I said yesterday, we're going to be focusing on, this is where kind of getting into the meat of the handout that I had yesterday. I recommend if you're here now, it'll be kind of like jumping in the middle of a semester's worth of material. So you're like halfway through the semester right now. Yesterday was the first half. But you can go listen to it. The good news is it'll be available online. It's free on the website. They'll tell you all about that later in the week if they haven't already. That's a kind of a cool thing this year that they're doing it for free rather than having to pay for it, which is nice. You can listen to it. Yesterday was the kind of the why behind the how that we're going to get into specifically today. That's the orphan care verses you'll see on page one, as well as what you'll be able to listen to. Today, I want to focus on how we can be doing this with excellence. So I'm going to start out with a video that just will kick off the day of, where did that cursor go? Anybody see it? No, there we are.
Nearly 40% of all children in the United States are born out of wedlock.
Nearly 35% of Caucasian children are born out of wedlock.
More than half of all Hispanic children in the U.S. are born out of wedlock.
More than 70% of all African American children are born out of wedlock.
One out of three children in America live in homes without their biological fathers. This means 24 million kids are growing up in homes without their dads.
Children who grow up in fatherless homes are five times as likely to be poor.
Fatherless boys and girls are two times as likely to drop out of high school, two times as likely to end up in jail, and four times as likely to have emotional and behavioral problems.
71% of pregnant teenagers grow up without a father.
71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes.
70% of juveniles in state reform institutions grew up in single-parent homes or without parents.
Children who grew up in fatherless homes are twice as likely to abuse alcohol or illegal drugs.
63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes.
For all your sons and daughters who are walking in the darkness, you are calling us to lead the life to you.
Will you make a difference?
Will you make a difference?
Will you make a difference?
So that I can live a better life.
Will you make a difference?
Will you make a difference?
So I don't become a parent before I'm ready.
You can make a difference.
So that I don't have to give myself away to feel loved.
You can make a difference.
So I don't have to get high to numb the pain.
You can make a difference.
You can make a difference.
You can make a difference.
So I don't look to gangs to be my family.
You can make a difference.
You can make a difference.
So that I don't have to learn what it means to be a man from the streets.
You can make a difference.
You can make a difference.
You can make a difference.
So that I can experience the love of Christ.
Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds.
Teach them to your children.
Talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road.
When you lie down and when you get up.
Deuteronomy 11, 18 and 19.
Right, I like that video because it doesn't just tell the stats, it doesn't just give a sob story, but it actually talks about some of the ways that we could help these kids. And you might not have seen that in that video, but at the very end, it talks about training them up, talks about teaching them the way when you're in your home, to talk about it at the dinner table, talks about it when you walk on the road, when you are doing life with children. That is a big part of how we can help them to not be broken, or to, I guess, not be, to be fixing the brokenness, right? To be repairing and restoring the brokenness. All of those children were, or are, at the time of the video, broken, vulnerable children, at-risk children who are in need of parents, in need of love, in need of help and support. But they were at one point not in a broken state. And so, as we talked about yesterday, the preservation, the family strengthening is a huge part of helping these children to be able to avoid, as they said, having to give themselves away to feel loved. We all know what she meant. To talk about not having to get high to numb the pain, to talk about not having to learn what it means to be a man on the streets, right? Because that's not what a man is if you're learning it on the streets, right? That's like we talked about yesterday, that's being a boy, that's being a male, but it's not being a godly man who's actually going to love children as they need to be loved, right? So that's kind of what we're gonna get into today, is on all these things, the interrelatedness of the family preservation, the orphan care, adoption, foster care, as well as the back-end anti-trafficking work, mentoring, things like that. Before we do that, I wanna point you to these orphan care resources on the front. This obviously is not an exhaustive list, same way the orphan care verses is not an exhaustive list, but this will give you a lot of reading, a lot of listening, a lot of time that we're gonna be, these are just a few of them, but the Orphan Justice is a fantastic resource written by a friend of mine, Johnny Carr, and he was a pastor, and then he was just a big orphan advocate for several years. He worked for Bethany Christian Services for a while. And he has a book that talks just about a lot of the issues of orphan care. At the end of every chapter, he has a part that says what everyone can do, what some can do, and what few can do. And so it's, you know, talking about all these different ways we can get involved. So I strongly recommend that book as a resource for how to get involved specifically on these things. Orphanology gives a big overview of orphan care, again, by Rick Morton, a good friend of mine. He actually has been able to be the co-host the last few episodes of the podcast as well. So great guy, great book. All in Orphan Care, if you have a church ministry and you're wanting to, or start a church ministry, or you have a church ministry, you want to know how to do these issues better. Jason Johnson, that guy, all he does is write, I'm convinced. He's good, you know, he runs the church relations ministry of Christian Alliance for Orphans. So he has a book called All in Orphan Care. He just wrote another book called Everyone Can Do Something. It's so new, I haven't even read it yet. It's in my backpack. I keep meaning to get into it, and the other books keep coming on top of it. Foster Care, he has fostered himself, and he also trains up a lot of people on foster care. He wrote a book called Reframing Foster Care. All these are on the sheet. I just want to give you a little bit of idea of what they are. And then I Call You Mine is a great Bible study by Kim DeBlaycourt. I just was able to endorse that book and interviewed her for the podcast, and I can't recommend that more. Even if you're not looking to get into orphan care, if you're in this room, you'll love that book because it talks about the theology of adoption as well as adoption itself. If you are an adoptive parent or if you know people who are in the middle of adoptions or who have adopted, it helps you understand that, a lot of those issues, and then what you can do even if you don't adopt or foster is kind of the end of the book. And it has great resources. It has scripture memorization. It has studies of scripture in that book. It's such a good resource. It comes out in September, and go ahead and you can go and pre-order it now if it's something that definitely worth your time. So great podcasts as well that are on here, websites. You can go check them out after we talk today, because I know we won't be able to cover everything today. And the good news is there's all kinds of other stuff you can go to after today. But what I do want to get into today is just to give you an idea so that when you do listen to those other resources, when you do go watch the other resources or read the other resources, you kind of have a good, 30,000-foot view of all this stuff that we're talking about and how it relates to everything else. I see a Run for Courage shirt over there. Didn't mean to point out where you're on your phone, but that Ashley Bryant, who runs Three Strands and started Run for Courage, which has been three or four other names, is a good friend of mine. We had lunch the other day and talked about all these things, how we can be working together on all this different work that we're doing around the world. And that's my hope for this time together, is that we see whatever you're passionate about, whatever you're wanting to do, whatever your kind of your niche, that you don't see it as a silo, that you just do what you do without understanding how it fits into the bigger picture and how you can work with others to make the bigger picture actually, you know, the bigger picture being alleviating orphan and vulnerable children crisis around the world, how we can work together to do that, because we absolutely need each other. The other book that I didn't mention that came out, it actually releases today, and I'm so excited about this book. It's called Rooting for Rivals, and it's on this issue of collaboration and teamwork. So I know I just gave you like a year's worth of reading or 5 years worth of reading, depending on how many books you pick up and read, but I want to give you different resources so you can check them out. And any one of these resources I'm talking about, I've read, even Rooting for Rivals, which came out today, I was able to read ahead of time, as well as I Call You Mine. And then the one I didn't read yet, I will soon because I'm interviewing Jason in a couple weeks. So the other good news is most of these people I've mentioned have been on the podcast. So you can go to the podcast, you can listen to their podcast and say, okay, I don't want to waste my time reading their book, or I love this person, I totally want to read their book, whatever it may be. They all kind of talk about their different things. So it's a really good resource for that. Okay, so before we get into specifics, things we can all be doing, first of all, praying for orphan and vulnerable children around the world. This is something that everyone says, oh, the one thing everyone can do, the easiest thing you can do is pray. I disagree with that statement. The hardest thing you can do is pray, because if you're praying, it takes time to know what you need to pray about. It takes investing in the organization. It takes actually talking with different people about how can I be praying, and then actually praying and not just saying we're going to be praying for you. That's something that I feel very strongly about, because I hear it all the time and I say it a lot. And so I've stopped saying I'm going to be praying for you. I either pray for them right there with them and talk with them about it, or I say, you know, continue telling me how I can be praying, and then I will pray at that moment that I see it on my phone or whatever it is. That's just how I do it. Not saying that's how everyone needs to do it. If you're a prayer warrior, thank you. I'm not like a guy who's just constantly, and I struggle, and it's something that actually bothers me a lot of the time, because I hear people all the time, just like, just everyone can pray, everyone just pray, as opposed to saying, you know what, this is like, Jesus was bleeding when he was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, that scene in The Passion of the Christ, if you've seen that, if you haven't, it's a phenomenal movie. But it's such a vivid picture of just, that's how intense it is when we actually pray. And when we pray, it makes a difference, it matters, right? So that's something I want to just say, like, we need so much prayer, but don't take it lightly, and don't just say, oh yeah, I'll be praying for you, and then don't do it, because that's a serious commitment, right? Okay. Advocating for all these things. If you're in this room and you're learning this stuff, just talk to people about it. That's all advocacy is. It doesn't have to be some big, you know, march on Washington or picketing something or doing something, you know, all over social media or anything. It's literally the most effective advocacy is word of mouth, talking one-on-one, go out to lunch with somebody, go to coffee with somebody, and just talk with them about how they can be a part of this too. And as we educate each other, it multiplies, right? And you could also do that other stuff too, and that can be effective. But I think the most effective, and that's from experience, is the word of mouth or the conversations with people that you can actually get to know and do that in a relationship. And if we can do that, it can be very powerful. You'll notice relationship, and that word comes up a lot in when I talk about these things, because I believe that is the key to this work, is we build relationships with each other, we build relationships with other organizations, we build relationships with other people who have common thoughts and common beliefs, but also people that are very different from us. I just did an interview with Kurt Thompson. If you haven't read his book, Anatomy of the Soul, another phenomenal book, that's actually about brain development and how our brains are wired and how our brains are wired for community. And the thing he talks about in that book that's phenomenal is that the most creative, innovative work comes when people that are most different from each other get together and do work together. And it's got all kinds of brain science to back it up and all kinds of examples. And it's episode 100 of the Think Orphan podcast, thinkorphan.com, for those of you who were not here yesterday. I had it as episode 100 because I was absolutely blown away by this guy. So I wanted to have a good, really good podcast on that 100th episode. So funding all these things. This is something I talk to people all the time. If you're passionate about something, if there's an organization you love what they're doing, if you want to get involved with something, start giving some money to it, because then you'll start praying for it more. Somebody once said, how much is the right amount to give? And, or some asked me that, and I asked several people that, and because I don't think there is a right number. And one woman said to me, whatever it is, whatever amount you need to give to get you to pray for it is a good starting place. And I was like, that's pretty good number, idea. But anyway, every one of these organizations, I don't care what organization it is, they need money to do the work they're doing. It's big, small, whatever. If you question how they're spending their money, ask them. And if they don't tell you, then I'd steer away. If they tell you, and you trust them, then keep trusting them and give them money for general funds. I will say that as a nonprofit executive, don't earmark unless there's something that you absolutely are so passionate about that it's the only thing you'd ever want to give to, because that just locks up money and sometimes they can't spend it for 5 years because they're not ready to do whatever it is, or they push whatever it is to the forefront when it really shouldn't be pushed to the forefront, if that makes sense. So I know that we've been in that position as a nonprofit before. So I just want to put that out there. Most nonprofit executives will not talk about that because you don't ever want to say, don't give me money for something. But I've actually told people no for certain projects because I don't want to be forced into that pigeonhole, because then you build a school building, for instance, that you're not ready to build and not ready to fund, and you build this building and then you don't have the funds on the back end to actually run the school in an excellent manner. So either you take away something else that you're doing, or you do it in a half, manner. And this is being recorded, so I have to be careful, and we are at family camp. So, so does that make sense to everybody? I don't think I need to dwell on that, but I just wanted to say that. But funding is a very important thing, but if you don't trust the organization, don't give to them. If you trust the organization, give to them and let them do with it what they need to do with it. That's how we give to churches almost all the time, so why would we not do that with nonprofits, right? Okay. Now we can get into the meat of the stuff. So, not that that wasn't meat, that was all meat, but this is more specific, more in the weeds. So family strengthening, as we talked about yesterday, family strengthening is a key to the prevention side, this is where I believe it needs to start, it needs to finish, it needs to be at the core of all that we're doing is family and strengthening families, getting kids into families to the extent possible, strengthening the families that exist, bringing back together, reconciling families. Nothing excites me more than when I hear, a separated couple saying we're coming back together to try to reconcile. And it just brings joy to my heart, because that is what this is all about, is reconciling relationships. It's about bringing together brokenness, taking brokenness and saying, how can we repair this? How can we restore it to God's intent and the shalom that God started all this with in the garden? Right, that is kind of, God is making all things new, these relationships. So family strengthening, so work on your marriage. Work on your family, your relationships with your kids. If there's any brokenness in there, work on that. Go to counseling if necessary. I think even if not necessary, counseling is a great thing. And whether it's with people in your church that you are counseling informally with, or in men's groups, women's groups, those things are critical in our lives. Do that. Don't just wait till there's a crisis, because then it's usually too late. Do it preemptively. A lot of this is just coming alongside people. So when you're strong, you can then help others to be strong who may need that help. My brother went through a lot of, marital issues in his life, with his wife. And they now are able to help other couples on a regular basis with people who are struggling through their marriages. And it's such a great testimony to the power, of God in a relationship when you give it up to God. And then you're able to help others. So they have other struggling couples come into their house and they help each other and they're continually learning as well. And so I encourage people to do that, because if we can strengthen our family, then we can help others strengthen their families. If we're all in shambles, then it's actually almost a worse thing, because then you go in, well, I guess this is just the way it is. And that's why the divorce rate keeps... And when families break down, children are left in the dust, right? And then we have a bunch of orphan and vulnerable children around our country, around our world. So again, that's when we talked about that river analogy. This is kind of going upstream and building that fence so the kids don't come into the water. Talk about the kids that are floating down the river, people come out and grabbing them out of the water. It's kind of like the symptoms of all the family breakdown are the kids in the water. If we can go up and cut it off before the kids can get in the water, that's the ideal, because then there's not a rescue. It's actually just helping kids be the best they can. Work to improve your parenting, as we talked about other, you know, study, research your kids, study your kids. I'm not talking research on Google. I mean, actually be present in their lives and know who they are and know how you can help them and love them. The handout, I'm not just going to read the handout. You can see that there's resources, and I try to put some podcast episodes. I try to put some books, different things. And just so you know, like, I don't get any money from this podcast. It's purely a resource. It's content that I know is helping people, and that's why we're doing it. So we don't even have advertising on it yet because we don't have the download amounts yet to do that. So it's not like I'm pumping something that's going to, you know, get out there. And I just want to make sure that, because some people are like, all right, all you do is talk about this podcast. I'm putting it there because these people are amazing. All these are like experts in the field who have written books and have done amazing things. And not only that, but they're very humble, incredible people who I would have no problem referring anyone to. So that's why I keep talking about it, because I really do believe that it's a phenomenal resource. Okay, the other thing I do not want to neglect to talk about is something that isn't talked about a lot, and that's crisis pregnancies, birth mother care, abortion, prevention, you know, and how we can walk alongside women before crisis to talk with them about making responsible decisions, how we can talk about in the midst of a crisis to actually love these girls. As I say, if a girl shows up in your church and she's pregnant, don't look at her in any condemning way or make her feel like she's not fully welcome, because the deed is done at that point, right? So there's no point in telling her, hey, you shouldn't have had sex. Well, thanks a lot, but that's a little late for that advice, right? So we need to come into that situation and love her, help her know. And there's an interview coming out in two episodes, a woman named Adrienne Collins, and she was in that situation when she was a junior in college at a Christian university, and she got pregnant, and she said she was, felt like she was just in the ocean flailing, you know, between these waves and just crashing all over her and around her. And I said, you know, what did you need in that moment? She said, I just needed someone to tell me I was loved and I had worth, and that I was valued. And it was this really powerful moment. Where I was just like, dang, you know, like, something I've never had to deal with personally. I mean, I can't remember a time in my church. And that's the sad thing, and that's something she said too, is she goes, we need more unwed mothers and unwed pregnant women in our churches. The fact that there aren't is a sad testimony on our churches. It's kind of an interesting way to think about it, right? But it's true, because there's so much shame. So much shame, and we need to come into that. And there's some interviews here that give some great ways to do that. But at the end of the day, again, it's relationship, it's love, it's coming in and not condemning. Because heck, none of us are, you know, who's going to cast the first stone, right? We all have our issues, and so it's a way to come into that and really love these women. And also, if you know who the dad is, to come alongside and around him as well. Because there's shame there that, you know, if you know who it is, then how can you help them to comfortably come together and either continue to have that child and then support them after birth, or help them into the adoption and then help them with counseling after, because there is so much shame in that too a lot of the times, right? And so these are things we don't talk about, we don't think about a lot of the times, but it's so massively important. Because if we don't do all of those things, and all we're doing is yelling at girls to the fact, how could you get an abortion, and yelling at clinics and burning down clinics and doing all these things with all that stuff, then it does not work. It's so inconsistent. It's so, hypocritical. Absolutely, but that has connotations. I don't even like using that because it brings up so many different thoughts. But it's absolutely inconsistent positions to say, well, we're not going to, you know, well, they blew it, but you know what, you can't go get abortions. Well, this girl is completely in a place where you're not thinking straight a lot of the times. And so anyway, the more I've done this, the more I've seen it, the more I've talked to women, the more I've, and the hard part too is And I don't know if anyone in this room has struggled through this or has friends that have. I assume there's at least one, but probably more in this room, that this is a very emotional, sensitive subject. And I've found most women, like, they don't even want to talk about it. And so to find people that I could talk about it on the podcast was really hard. And that alone told me something that, man, we need to learn how to talk about these things, because if we don't, we're going to keep having, you know, who's more vulnerable than a child in the womb? Right? So that's something that, you know, we could talk about that for 5 sessions, but I want to make sure that we understand that, learn more about that, and how we can actually do that better. All right, poverty alleviation. So this is another one that is on the prevention side. If we can alleviate poverty, particularly around the world, now this is hard to talk about in the U.S. because we don't see extreme poverty in the U.S. If you've ever traveled globally to a developing country and you've gone to the slums, that's extreme poverty. When they're building houses out of like cellophane and, you know, it's like whatever they can pull off the dump, that's what they're building their house out of. And some of them are 2-3 stories and you have no idea how they're standing, you know, up, and then the storm comes through and they aren't standing up anymore and they rebuild, whatever. That's extreme poverty, right? So how many of those families are so desperate they put those kids in those orphanages we were talking about yesterday, where 80% of the kids in the orphanages have living family members, right? So how can we come in and alleviate the poverty? I talked about Brian Fickert yesterday. I wanted to give this When Helping Hurts, this is a great little video where Brian gives a 3-minute version of the core of his book. And I wanted to put this out there because poverty alleviation is not as simple as just giving money to kids or families or feeding them or giving them clothes. It's so much more than that. And Brian kind of gives what the book talks about, and then I strongly recommend you go.
Not too far from here, there's a restaurant, my family.
That you go get When Helping Hurts and read the rest of the book, because you'll see he's pretty strong. By the way, he's 6'10". So he is just a massive man. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but it just blows me away when people are that tall. So, you know, and we were having dinner one night, and he was like way back from the table, and his knees were hitting mine. I'm like, how is that possible? How do you even eat? You're like, you know, I don't, anyway. So.
Not too far from here, there's a restaurant my family likes to go to, and every single time that we pull up into the parking lot, there's a lady who approaches our car asking us for money. And on the surface of it, she's not dressed very well. It's clear that she isn't eating very well and she's hungry. And so the symptom is a lack of material things. She doesn't have adequate clothing and adequate food. We in the West, in North America, are fundamentally materialist people. We think of the world in materialistic terms. We think of poverty as a lack of material things. We think the solution to poverty is to provide material things for people. But it's so interesting, if you ask poor people around the world what is poverty, they define it in very different ways. If you ask the poor, they will say things like, to be poor is to be full of shame, is to be embarrassed, is to be humiliated, is to feel less than human, is to feel like you're not really part of society. The poor describe their poverty, yeah, in material terms, but in far more psychological and social terms than most North Americans do. What the Bible teaches us is that God is fundamentally a relational being. He relates Father, Son, and Holy Ghost to himself. And he's wired us in his image. We're wired for relationship as well. We are fundamentally relational beings. And the scriptures teach us that each human being has been given 4 key relationships that define really what it means to be human. Human beings are wired for a relationship with God, with ourselves, our self-image, our self-concept, a relationship with others, finally, a relationship with the rest of creation. When these 4 relationships are working properly, we experience humanness in the way that God intended. Unfortunately, the fall of humanity into sin has broken and distorted those key relationships. That woman in the parking lot who doesn't have adequate clothing and food, that inadequacy in material things is rooted in something far deeper, the brokenness that she's experiencing in her relationships with God, self, others, and the rest of creation. So as we try to help her, we've got to come out of that framework saying her lack of things is really a symptom of something far deeper. We've got to get down to those deeper things to really help her. What I'm starting to realize What the Lord is showing me is that once we define poverty as being rooted in broken relationships, it's not just that lady in the parking lot who's lacking food, who's poor, but that I too am poor. I've got two cars in the driveway, I've got a nice house. I'm not materially poor, but there's profound brokenness in my life. I'm not experiencing all that God intended for me. And so what I'm discovering as the director of the Chalmers Center and in my work with the materially poor is that I actually can't fix them. And I used to think that I could. I can't fix them. Only Jesus Christ can fix them. And I can't fix me. Only Jesus Christ can fix me. And so poverty alleviation isn't so much about me putting food in the hands of that beggar lady as much as it's taking her hand and saying to her, I'm a beggar too, but I found the bread of life, and he can heal you and he can heal me too.
Let's see if I can get this before. No, I didn't. I can't. Where are we? Come on. All right. World Cup playing right now. Sorry. This is the problem. There we go. Hey, if anyone's following this on their phone, don't say anything, please, because I'm going to watch it later. All right.
Not too far from here, there's...
Okay, so... I'm just going to leave it here because I'm going to come back to something else. So, yeah, I wanted to show that because he says it in there so clearly and concisely. It's so right on that it's not about going and giving her stuff. It's not about going. It's entering in, right? And there's so much more to what he said. It's not just about saying, hey, Jesus loves you, because that's obviously down the road a little bit for some of these people. Sometimes you need to give someone food and clothing and shelter before they can hear that, right? But don't stop there. Don't think that saves them. In fact, that could make it worse, right? Because then they just think, well, the only way I can make it is if somebody else comes in and gives me all this stuff. So all that brokenness, all that sociological issues, all the psychosocial issues, all the other problems actually get exacerbated. And then what he talked about with our brokenness is that we think we're God a lot of the time. So we come in and give all this stuff, and then we're exacerbating our God complex while they're exacerbating their issues with sociological and everything else. And so are there people in poverty in the U.S.? Absolutely. All of us are, right? It's not always material poverty. So when we start seeing it as our mutual brokenness and how we can reconcile those relationships with God, self, others, and the rest of creation, it changes everything. Because we're mutually broken people who are coming together to try to reconcile all those relationships together. And so sometimes the best thing that you can do to alleviate poverty is to help, is allow someone to serve you if you go on a mission trip or if you're going into the inner city. Allow someone to bring you into their house and give you a meal because it gives them dignity and worth and shows them you can serve because we're all created to serve. Some of my most poignant memories around the world are sharing tea. I talked about it yesterday, sharing tea with a friend's father-in-law in the slums of Delhi in his three-bedroom house that was literally three tiny rooms that had beds in them that were stacked on top of each other because the government gave him one little room and he built on top. And sharing a meal with another family in Honduras where they basically had their entire week's salary on a little piece of meat for five of us, and they stand behind the counter watching us eat, and it gave them complete joy that they talked about 5-6 years later as I continued to visit them. Those are the things that are so counter, like intuitive. But when we're going in as mutually broken people, it stops being counterintuitive. Then it becomes like, oh, okay, I see it now. And so then we can hopefully start looking more into what it looks like to actually alleviate poverty. Because if we can alleviate poverty, and then the other thing that talks about, it's so interconnected with family strengthening, right? Because if you have this, if you don't have this worth and this dignity and this, if you're depressed and all these things, it's really hard to have a strong family. It's really hard to have the dignity and the self-worth and self-respect to think I can go get a job. I can create income for my family. Instead, you're just desperate, and you're like, there's no way. The only chance my kid has is if I send him to an orphanage. And you don't see the value you have in your kid's life because you don't even value yourself. That happens all the time in the U.S. too, by the way. There's a poverty of love in our culture. There's poverty of community in our culture, big time. I talk to people all the time around the world. I go, yeah, you don't have a lot of material things, but you have community. We have a lot of material things in the U.S., and we lack community big time. And I'm just as guilty as the next guy. I go into my garage and shut the garage door because I'm tired. I want to get home, and I want to just sit. My neighbor's sitting across the street, wave, hey, how you doing? We're good, you know, we're friends, but I can go over and talk with him, but I don't a lot of the time. I have other neighbors. We've talked about getting together for dinner for 2.5 years, and we haven't yet, right? So these are things that we can be more intentional about. And as we do that, there's going to be less orphan and vulnerable children around the world because we're not going to have families breaking down. We're not going to have families giving their kids up because they don't have money. And they think that will give them the, quote, better life. If they don't have family, it's just a Band-Aid or a gaping head wound. All right, I was going to show the video of the trailer for Poverty Inc., but for sake of time, you can go check that out on your own. You can also listen to that. There's two interviews with Michael Miller, who directed and produced Poverty Inc. and Poverty Cure series. Phenomenal, phenomenal resources. Poverty Inc. was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is, but you can get it online, whatever. It costs $4 to rent it on Amazon. It's so worth it. And it talks about how too often poverty alleviation becomes a business and is about the people that are providing the aid. It's about giving them, whether it's the God complex, whether it's the, they actually sometimes get money because it's business for them because they get subsidies from governments, where it actually exacerbates the poverty in most of these countries. Aid, there have been, I think 103 trillion was the last number, and I think it's higher now, I know it's higher, of foreign aid since the 1960s, and most of the countries that it's gone to are worse off now than they were in the 1960s. And so that alone tells us it's broken, it's not working, and we need to really, again, because we're just handing out stuff and it's not working. They're like, no, we need, basically one of the ladies in the thing says, we need a seat at the table. We don't need a bunch of stuff, we need a seat at the table, meaning we need to be respected as business men and women who can get, you know, they can go to England and actually pitch an idea and be heard, rather than that's cute, you're the little kid, there's a kid's table, go for it, because that's kind of the feeling they have, and it's actually well-deserved feeling. It's not something that poor me. It's not a victim mentality. It's actually legitimate. So that's that book. So job creation, microenterprise. There's different things you can get involved with for poverty alleviation to help out. But at the end of the day, you know, it's also about relationships. It's also, if you go on a mission trip, build relationships, encourage people. Don't just go and build something and leave. And then keep those relationships up. And tell people, you know, encourage people that they are unique children of God that can do amazing things. I think that's the best role we can do in that regard. Okay, discipleship, as we talked about yesterday. I mean, this is an area that goes through, again, across all areas, whether it's mentoring, whether it's anti-trafficking work in the restoration side, whether it's family strengthening, whether it's poverty alleviation, as you heard Brian Fickert talk about, discipleship and your identity. Discipleship is your identity as a unique child of God who's created, as Phil Tuttle talked about last night, we are created for good works which God prepared for us beforehand, right? God has prepared for each of us and for everybody in this world unique good works. And in the Greek, it's purposeful. That good word, good works, means purposeful works, that we are purposed to do something. That's the prayer I pray over my children every night, for them to know the purposes God has given them and for them to use those gifts and talents to fulfill those purposes to God's glory. And they said, Dad, you pray the same thing every night. I said, if that's the one thing you remember when you leave this house, then I think I've done a pretty good job. And they will not leave the house without knowing that. And it was really funny because my daughter came home from a conference. She goes, Dad, it was the coolest thing. This pastor, he does this thing every night with his kids. He prays for them and prays this prayer that he says every night. And it's, God, can you help my kids to know the gifts and talents they have and to use their gift and talents for the kingdom? And I just looked at her. I'm like, really? That's a really interesting prayer. She's like, yeah, it was so cool. I was like crying when I heard him say that. And I was like, Our kids won't always know it until later is the point, but keep doing it. Keep doing it. It's worth it, and it's gonna. And they are hearing it, I think, hopefully, and someday they're gonna. It will stick. It was quite the moment. But yeah. So and then as we talk about too, church planting here. You know, if your church plants churches, understand how to love the orphan vulnerable in the context of that church plant. We talked about that yesterday, so I'm not going to dwell on that. Some interviews on that as well. All right, so adoption, foster care. Obviously, one way to care for orphan and vulnerable children is to adopt orphaned children and to foster children, whether they're orphaned or in a vulnerable at-risk situation. The ideal situation, remember, as we talked about yesterday, is for a healthy biological mother and father to raise the biological children in their home. Healthy being the key term. If that is a broken relationship and it's something that's not able to be, reconciled, then adoption in a family that's healthy, the mother and father for that child, is kind of the next step. And we go from there. How can we substitute that ideal as closely as possible is kind of the thing I always say. What is missing, right? So if you're a single parent household, the other side of that, either the father or the mother, depending on who the single parent is missing. So how can we mimic that role as closely as possible in that, whatever that setting is? So that goes to kind of mentoring later on. But I say that in the context of foster and adoption, because foster care, if you do foster care, it's really hard not to kind of secretly wish, if you really want to do foster to adopt, to secretly wish that and hope for the mother or the father or the parents of this child to not get healthy again, because you want to have this child in your home, because you've bonded and attached to this child. And the better foster parent you are from the attachment side, the harder it is to give that child back up if the mother, father, whoever is healthy again. So you're almost wishing against the parent to become healthy, which is just a terrible thing to be doing, right? And that's very selfish, but it's very human. It's very much human nature, and it's very much understandable. We're selfish beings. And you know, I've always said, you never know how selfish you are until you get married. And then you really never know how selfish you are until you have kids after you get married. And then it goes from there. But I think this is another area where you see that, right? So to continually be praying for if you are a foster parent, if you continue to be praying for the biological parents, to continually be praying for the children to have the best setting, if that's you, if that's somebody else. And for you to continue to be praying for yourself to be able to have the right posture before God with these children, for these children. Adoption's the same thing. And then there's also the idea of wraparound care. There's a woman, Sharon Ford, and I am going to do this one because Sharon was on the podcast, and she talks about wraparound care here.
Yeah, and you also have talked to me about wraparound care for foster and adoptive families and birth mothers and kinship care providers. You know, and really when you start talking about the birth mothers and wraparound care, and that's really preventing orphans from happening. What happens when that wraparound care, well, first of all, what is wraparound care, you know, for those of out there that don't, and then what happens when it's not there?
I am so glad you asked about wraparound care, because that's the other thing that Focus really is passionate about, that's one of our main areas, is lots of people call it post-adoption support. I call it post-placement support, because whether you're a foster parent or an adoptive parent, you need someone who's supporting you. Once that child comes into your home, where's that post-placement support that helps with you keeping being sane? Can you cook? Can you clean? Can you drive a car? Can you rake a lawn? Can you mow a lawn? Can you fold clothes? Can you bring an extra meal? Can you just play with my kid, you know, the kids, so that I can maybe take another child to therapy or have date night with my husband or date night with one of my kids? When you're a foster parent and you have, you know, one, two, or even three or four kids in your foster kids in your home, how do you spend individual time with each of the children? And then spend time, you know, just as a group, as a family, having someone else help you do that so that you do it well really makes a difference. It makes the workload less. When I think about foster parents having that extra support, adoptive families needing that extra support, it's the difference between being keep going and being sane and having extra time to pray, having extra time just for you. You know, sometimes people get lost in the kids stuff that you get lost. And so that's...
So that, I mean, obviously goes on from there, but that's the idea, right? Like, can you mow a lawn? Can you... There's this 85-year-old man who says, I can't do foster care right now, but I can mow lawns. So I mow people's lawns who I know are doing foster care or adopting. He drives in his pickup truck with the lawnmower on the back and goes around to the church families who he knows are doing that. And can, it's little things. But I'd say if you are a foster parent or if you are an adoptive parent or a parent for that matter, and you need help, like be specific with people on how they can help and then accept the help. Because the problem is when you think about it, most people who adopt and foster are the type of people, and you know those people, you may be that person, my wife's one of these people, that they will give anything and everything away and help people in any possible way they possibly can, but they will never ask for it. And somebody says, how are you doing? You need any help? Yeah. I mean, no, I'm fine. Everything's good. Oh, yeah, your husband's away for a couple weeks. Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's fine. We got it. You got five kids at home and you're going crazy. Well, yeah, I know, but it's fine. We'll get it. We'll figure it out. We got it. And so when people ask me now, like, what does Becca need? I said, what she needs is you to show up at our house whenever you're free and you can spend some time doing something and just show up on a Tuesday at 3 and say, or whatever day on whatever time and say, hey, can I take the kids to the park? Can I go shopping for you? Can I do your laundry? Can I whatever? Because I know when I come home from a trip, there's a pile full of clothes in our living room because for whatever reason, our kids didn't get it done. But that weighs on her, right? And that's how it is with families, right? Most people that are doing this will never ask. And so show up, be there. And just sometimes, I mean, I don't know a time that somebody's done that with my wife and she hasn't gloriously said yes, take my kids to wherever you want to take them for however long you want them. And she loves our kids very much. But we need that time. You know, I mean, as she said, the time to just do nothing, to pray, to just stare at the wall. Sometimes we need to do that, right? I mean, even talking about that in the talks this week, the rest. I mean, how many of us are too busy to rest? Right? I know I'm there a lot of the time. So ask for help if you're on the side that needs the help. Accept the help. And then intentionally seek out how you can help and act on it, not just talk about it. Again, it goes back to like that praying part, right? And all this is in relationship too. Don't just show up at random person house and say, hey, how can I take your kids to the park? That didn't work very well. I don't recommend that. If you don't know the foster family, the adoptive family, don't offer to take their kids to the mall, okay? If you know them and you're in relationship with them, you will also know how they can be helped. All right. Orphanages, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but the book, In Pursuit of Orphan Excellence, covers this. You know, again, 100% of the funds we get from the book go back to both pay for the book and to La Providencia. I don't take any of that money outside of, you know, my salary that I get for the working for the organization. But the ideas there are, really the idea that went in the book is how can we love with excellence the children who likely won't be adopted, don't have kin to care for them, and don't have biological family, right? So the kids who are in the world, whether it's 2 million, 10 million, 20 million, whatever that number is, doesn't even matter. If there's five of them, we want to know how to love them. And as I said yesterday, the question is, what does every kid need? What would I demand? What would I want for my kids if something happened to my wife and me? What does that look like? And that's the nine prongs, the family, the education, the, let me go back to this so that you guys, the community integration, the psychosocial care, the nutrition, medical, dental care. It's all on here. Self-sustainability, spiritual formation, national leadership. These are the things these kids need. And so how can we best give that to these kids in any given situation to be thinking about that, okay? And with all of this, the interesting thing is, as I talk about the interconnectedness, this is something that everyone says, do you still practice law? I say, I don't practice law technically, but I'm using my legal skills every day. And these are the things as my mind wraps around this stuff. The interconnectedness with everything is so apparent and more apparent the more I do it. So we've been talking about the wraparound care, right? What is that doing with the families that have these kids, whether it's foster, adoptive, biological? Strengthening the families, right? It's preemptively alleviating poverty, whether poverty of self, right? If you're not able to know who you are, it's also discipleship, because you're able to give them a chance. You're showing love, you're showing care, you're living out the gospel in that sense, and you're also giving the people time to spend in the word, time to just study, time to pray, time to just listen to God, right? I mean, I know in my house with 5 kids and a job and, you know, other stuff that's going on, you know, to date my wife is hard, to go on, you know, for her to have time to go read the Bible. You know, we got to get up at the crack of dawn and hope and pray our kids don't get up. You know, and then, you know, usually they do. And then you feel bad telling them that, you know, but then again, they need to see you. But anyway, you guys get the point if you have kids. You know what I'm talking about. Some of you are probably having like PTSD flashbacks right now if you don't have kids in the home anymore. But I talked about the statistics on how orphanages are not working, which is why we want to say, how can we get family? And the as you'll see in the book, the bookends of the framework are spiritual formation and family. And I believe those are the tenets that have to be the pillars of what we're doing in these kids' lives. Surrounding them with family who love them and will be there for them their entire life, and spiritual formation grounding in the gospel. All of us here, that's our worldview. And well, I assume if it's not, we can talk afterwards. But it's so important for those kids to know it's not about them. Right? As much as we're going to love them and we want to pour into them and make, you know, talk about their unique gifts and talents, it's not about them. It's about something much, much bigger. I want to talk a little bit about missions, but I want to finish through anti-trafficking aftercare and mentoring. So the idea of anti-trafficking work, and I know there's a couple people in this room that's their passion, because I've talked with a couple of you, and so what I want to talk about here is the likelihood with anti-trafficking work is that you are going to be no more than an advocate. It's not very likely, unless you have specialized training. And we were talking about, you know, law enforcement, right? So if you think I want to go in and be like a, you know, rescuer of kids in Cambodia and go into the brothels, you know, good luck with that. It's crazy difficult, especially today. It's getting harder and harder because the traffickers know that there's these guys who are coming in and posing as clients. So usually they now, from what I understand talking to my friends who do it, they are requiring the first-time customer to literally go into a room with one of the brothel owners, and they will watch them have sex with this child. Because so many times they've gone and taken the girls away or interviewed them and found out about all the hidden places, and that's how they were able to do their research. They'd pose as, and if any one of these guys they've found out, they're dead and they'll never be found again. They disappear. So if that excites you and that is something you want to do, I'm not going to say that you're not called to do that. I'm just saying that most people think, oh, that'd be fun. That's not fun for me. I don't know. It's craziness. But some people are called to do that. Thank the Lord, because we need people to do stuff like that. Most of us will be bringing this issue to the light. The amazing thing to me is a lot of people still haven't heard about it, still don't believe it's happening. It's like a movie. It's like, oh yeah, that happened on Taken. Well, yeah, Taken is, it's a picture of it, but it's not really the most realistic picture of it, because typically, you know, it's not some girl backpacking Europe. It's a foster kid who's living this, you know, working the streets or walking the streets or whatever. Ashley Bryan of Three Strands, I interviewed her on the podcast, and she talked about the traffickers. She actually was able to go to prison and interview traffickers, and said, and they said, we're looking for the square, you know, in a bunch of round, basically, right? Like, we're looking for that one that sticks out, that one that's different. And that's the one we're going to go after, because they're the ones who are probably struggling with something, probably the orphan, the vulnerable, whatever it is. They're going to be the kids that the traffickers are targeting. The other thing is, don't participate in it directly or indirectly. Pornography is one of those ways. That is a massive part of the trafficking industry. It helps it, it funds it, it helps a lot of it, and just don't do it. There's a lot of interviews on these things. There's so many, like cyber sex trafficking is something that International Justice Mission's fighting against. Krista Sharp, that interview, she goes into that. It is so dark. It is so depraved. I mean, to believe that, like, when you hear some of the stories and you see some of it firsthand, as far as not necessarily, like, obviously, firsthand as you're going to get without getting involved in it, but just walking the streets of Thailand, you see movie theaters that are not movie theaters anymore, and there's just 20 girls standing out front, and tourists are using their services. And it's just out in the open. It's just the norm. It's just, that's Bangkok, or that's Chiang Mai, or that's Phnom Penh, or that's whatever. And as we talked about yesterday, so much of it is worldview, that it's not, it goes back to the discipling is part of this, right? We're not rescuing most of these girls out of trafficking. We're discipling them out of trafficking a lot of the times, or out of prostitution a lot of the times, because in a worldview in Cambodia, the daddy says, hey daughter, you need to go sell yourself to pay for my loan. Because that the Buddhist worldview in its pure form says girls are lesser because they had a bad past life, so now they're a female. And so a dad doing that, I mean, that's not a dad in my opinion. That's a biological person who impregnated a woman is now is living in the same house as this girl. That's not a dad. Dad doesn't say that to his daughter, but that's normal. So if you go into that brothel and, quote, rescue that kid, she's going to go right back in because she's doing it for her daddy. It's a lot of effort, a lot of time when you're not actually discipling that child in worldview. So you got to see it as interconnected, right? Otherwise, we're just dealing with symptoms and we're not going to solve anything. We need to strengthen that family so that dad doesn't do that. To disciple him to change his worldview. Or also the poverty, that he's not so desperate if he does have a solid worldview that he says this is the only way we can support our family. Or the mother who does the same thing because she has no chance to do anything to keep her kids fed, so she has feels like she has to sell herself. Right? These are the things that if we don't see it as an interconnected whole, see what I'm talking about there? Same thing with mentoring. If we don't mentor these children and have preemptive family strengthening, by training them up what it means to be a dad, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a wife, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mother and a father. If we're not training them up in that, and we're just saying we're going to fix this kid and help them to graduate high school, that's not the goal we got to have. That's part of it, maybe. Or maybe it's to help them get a trade. But if we're not teaching them of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a unique child of God, we're just pushing it down the road for someone else. We're pushing the problem out into the world, and then it's probably going to manifest in all those things we heard at the beginning of the talk today, in that video. Because this brokenness will manifest over and over throughout life. The guy who spoke here week one, me, Richard Dahlstrom, he was a great pastor up in Seattle, and he said he was adopted as a kid. And he talked about a time where he was getting dropped off the airport with his wife, and they got in a fight, whatever. And she said to him, "Don't hurry home." And he was joking about it. He's like, "Don't hurry home." He goes, "I may not come home," or something. And he goes, "Great way to leave, you know, for a flight for 10 days, whatever." But then he said something that just stuck out like a sore thumb in the talk because it didn't really fit to me. I mean, maybe it did, but it came out of nowhere for me. He said, "And this rush of memories of my thought of my mom leaving me and my issues, my orphan heart issues came out." Manifested decades later in the context of a healthy marriage with one little fight, right? So if we don't, and you're not going to take all that away, but we can repair it and we can pour in. I'm going to start with this. There was a Josh Shipp. He's actually from San Jose. I don't know if some of you may know him. He's a mentor, and he works with teen youth. And he said, we need to really have the Babe Ruth method when we're working with teens. And he said, and you guys are familiar with Babe Ruth when he pointed to the left field wall as baseball player, one of the best baseball players ever, and there's this legend now. It may have happened. We don't know. We don't have video of it, but I heard it enough, so probably did. He pointed to the left field wall, and then he actually swung and hit a home run over the left field wall. So he called his shot, right? He said, we need to implement that in our work with teens, because so many of the teens are broken and no one ever follows through with promises in their mind. And so he said, we need to say on a Sunday, hey, Johnny, on Thursday, I know you need some school supplies, so on Thursday, I'm going to bring school supplies for you. And then you need to show up on Thursday with those school supplies. Rather than being Santa Claus on Thursday and just showing up with school supplies, because then that's another handout for him. But if you actually promise something on Sunday and you deliver on Thursday as you promised and do that over and over and over again, it can undo a lot of those broken promises that were happening before. And on that note, if you're going to mentor, only do it if you can commit to the life of that child. Mentoring organizations think that that's crazy that I say that. But and I guess, and John Sowers, who runs the Mentoring Project, he actually said it in a way that I thought was better. Unless there is a specific commitment that you make and then you fulfill and then you're done. But make sure at the beginning of that relationship, say, hey, I'm going to be here for a year because I want to focus on something specifically in your life that I'm going to train you on, leadership development, whatever it is. And then after that year, we'll go from there, right? That's one way you can do it. But if you're just coming and said, hey, I'm going to be your mentor, and it's open-ended, only do it if you can continue in the life of that child for their life. And yes, that's a massive commitment, but we have technology. It's not that hard to write a text every so often. It's not that hard to get on Skype if you move. But if you're in that life, go to lunch, go to coffee, go hang out with them for a little bit. If you can't do that, then don't do it, and that's okay. But if you feel called to mentor, don't do it because it's a check-the-box type thing or because your men's group's doing it at church. If you can't really commit, that's why I don't do mentorship right now. I can't commit to that right now with my five kids. I can hardly take them on little dates and pour into them as they need to be poured into and love them individually as they need to be loved. So I don't take on that role right now. I don't take on board memberships on organizations that I love and that have asked me to be because I have to pour into my kids, and I'm the only daddy they have. The only husband my wife has. So I got to pour into them, and that's what I encourage all of us to do. And then to the extent we're called into other arenas, only do it if you can do it right. Because if you don't do it right, good intentions are not enough. We talk about that all the time in orphan care. Good intentions are not enough. If we don't do it right, we're going to end up hurting the people that we're trying to help more than we're helping them. And that's the last thing any of us wants to do. No kid wants you to go love them out of guilt. They want you to love them because you love them. The only way to do that is to actually build a relationship with them. Same thing with family, same thing with all the stuff we're talking about. All right, let me pray. And your kids are probably still where they're supposed to be. So we'll be good. Lord, thank you so much for these couple days. Thank you for everyone in this room. So much information, so much you have for us to do. But we get to do it with you, Lord. Pray that we can see it as that, see it as you giving us the opportunity to work with you, to love the children that you love more than we ever will. Thank you for loving us in that way. And I thank you for just giving us, wiring us for relationship and community and giving us people to do life with. Lord, just pray that this is just the start of the conversation and that we can continue to do this work together in awesome ways for the kingdom. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.